For more than 35 years, Ross Simons has been involved in nearly every facet of the sports and entertainment facility industry in the United States. From design and construction to operations, marketing and public relations to safety and security. At Venue Solutions Group, Ross directs the firm's safety, security, risk and crowd management operations. He works with operators at every level, from college to major professional leagues. His work goes hand in hand with architects and engineers to design facilities that are safe, operationally efficient, and sustainable. IIFX caught up with Ross at the newly completed $5 billion state-of-the-art SoFi Stadium in LA to discuss the challenges of the pandemic, future solutions, and how he thinks we will be able to return to work, play, and spectate.
Hi, Ross. Welcome to the Return to Work, Play, and Spectate podcast. How are things going?
Well, we're, like everyone else, optimistic that someday we will return to work and maybe relax enough to enjoy some play. But right now, you know, the changing nature of things is it keeps us all on our toes every day.
Well, we're really grateful that you've joined us today for this discussion. You've been involved in every facet of the sports and entertainment facility industry, including design, construction, and management. You've been in the industry for more than 35 years. It's fantastic for us that you've agreed to join us. Can you start off by telling us a little bit about your career and introduce yourself to those that don't know you?
Yeah, sure. Thank you. So as you said, it's now closer to 40. I'm right up on the 40 line. And it's funny, in your career, in the beginning, you want to seem like that you're more experienced than you really are. Right. It's like growing up. Right. You want to be older until you're older. And then you're like, oh, my God, I'm old. I need to be younger. You know, a really fortunate career led by the good work and investment of others. You know, I mean, when I look at my career, I don't think I would be anywhere near where I am today without other people having either, you know, purposefully or mistakenly invested in me and maybe seeing something in me that I didn't see in myself that allowed me to actually gain the expertise and experience that I now provide to others. And so this conversation begins with me being enormously grateful. And if anything, I would share with listeners about how important the actions that they take and the investments they make in people every single day, what it means to the enterprises that they represent, but also what it means to the future of those individuals. And so it's hard for me to get beyond how important people are in terms of making us all better. And when you mentioned the variety of experience that I've had, and it is, you know, not just over time, but fortunate to be considerable, it also should appropriately include the balance that I have made every mistake that could be made in our business. I've done everything badly that could be done. And so hopefully I've learned from those things. And my mantra is not to make the same mistake twice. And so hopefully through that really shovel in the dirt kind of experience, sort of getting better and better, and then hopefully making having a commitment to making those around me better. I am sitting here today from SoFi Stadium, which is sort of the newest, grandest, whatever the words are, and it's not hyperbole. We look at this stadium to be revolutionary, not evolutionary. And by what that really means for us is that facilities evolve on a natural pace. You look at everything that's been done before, you put your own twist on it, you make necessary improvements, you incorporate technology, that type of thing. And then you bring yours online. And if you look through any facility type, you'll see how they naturally progress. But there rarely are there generational movements. And there's not just one generational movement here. There are several generational movements in almost every aspect of what we do. You know, whether it's the size or whether it's the technology or the dynamic flexibility. I mean, all of those things. As people will come to know this stadium and sort of what has been accomplished based on the vision of Stan Kroenke as being something extraordinary and really setting the stage for how buildings will evolve in the future. So from the smallest types of facilities you can imagine. I mean, I have a good friend named Jason Barnes down in Lake Charles, just a small facility where McNeese State plays. I mean, part of 100 colleges and universities that I've worked in, all the way to every major professional sports franchise in North America and many around the world. A fantastic career and opportunity to learn each and every day in the business. And so, you know, I guess the last thing I would say about this is that I started in marketing and public relations, and if you ask me an honest question, I'd say that's probably where I have a knack for, that sort of a DNA thing. But it wasn't until I actually got into, you know, construction, design, operations, safety and security, that I really felt like I found my rhythm, because each one of those things represent the necessary coordination of more than one thing. You're not just fixing one thing, right? And you're not just selling one product, no disrespect to that. But no decision you make in any of the operating areas is done in a vacuum. And they have expected and intended consequences that you can plan for, and unexpected consequences that you have to always take into account in order to ultimately be successful in your goals. So fantastic career led by fantastic people.
Yeah, you mentioned the SoFi Stadium, but we're talking about the home to the Los Angeles Rams and the Chargers, as well as being an entertainment venue. Is that correct?
Yeah, and so the entertainment factor is really a big thing. So, you know, first of all, we're the second stadium with MetLife that will host more than one National Football League team. That in and of itself creates the expected amount of challenges, right? Because working with teams is complex and complicated, and now we have two teams that aren't exactly the same, and they have their own take on things. They have their own way to do things, and so. Unlike many facilities that have a primary tenant, you can't rely on doing something a certain way. You have to actually be able to switch on the fly. With the recent changes in the NFL schedule, we were scheduled to do a Rams Monday night football game, but the schedule mandated a change. So now we'll do a Sunday afternoon Chargers game, flip over to a Monday night NFL game. And we knew that those things were coming. I would tell you, in an honest conversation, I was hoping we'd have a little more time to have our oars in the water before we do that. But the staff at this building has been mostly handpicked because of their experience, their expertise, their skill set. And so nobody's afraid of the challenge, but they probably wish they had a little more time to get the rhythm of the building before we go diving in. But dive in we will.
So this year, the global pandemic hits. How are you dealing with it?
So a little bit of background for me. You know, in 2003, I was a part of the IAVM's effort on SARS. In 2011, I was part of the effort on Ebola. So I have a bit of background in some of these things coming up. And as many of our listeners who know me know that I tend to pay attention to things not only just current in the industry, but also always looking forward as to the things that could influence this. I would have had no ability to predict this, because this is a pandemic unlike any pandemic the world has experienced since the Spanish flu, right? So I mean, this hit everybody sort of hard and fast, and in some cases at night, I think to myself, you know, I should have been better prepared. Then I think, how could I have been better prepared? The answer to that is the work that's been done since. You may be aware that I'm leading the IAVM COVID-19 response working group with several subgroups in collaboration with Mark Herrera and Greg Wolf, and under the leadership of Brad Main. And, you know, that I volunteered for that because I knew if I wasn't at the actual forefront of this, that I would probably get behind and never be able to catch up. And so it was a self-preservation thing to be able to say, get your hands in it, stay at the very front, because it was clear that the changing nature of this thing was not going to be predictable. It was clear early that it was going to have a material effect. And you know, optimism aside, the realism is that no one anticipated that we would be where we are today. And in fact, again, optimism this aside, I don't think anybody can predict where we're going, because the disease itself has taken many, many twists and turns. Whenever we thought we started to understand something about it, something else would manifest itself. I mean, the right now, the current science suggests that while it's a respiratory disease in terms of the majority of how people are contracting it, but the impacts on the body are vascular and with major organs and, you know, I mean, it's science fiction stuff about, you know, like sort of what to be afraid of. And then we sit in the public assembly facilities where we rely on mass gathering. And now we have a situation where, you know, we're kind of last, I think. You know, it took a lot for people to go to grocery stores. It took a little, you know, back to retail. And those things are not back in their entirety. Now that, you know, the National Football League, for example, has 16 plus franchises that are allowing fans, the evidence is fans are reluctant to go. I mean, we've been beating the heck out of everybody about to be respectful and, in fact, fearful of this disease now for 7 or 8 months. People aren't ready to take the psychological leap. So how do we prepare for that? You know, how do we make sure that we can create confidence? And it starts with our own employees. We have to be able to create confidence with our own employees that they're going to be coming to or returning to a safe work environment. And we've got to do all of the things that are going to be necessary for the public to actually be willing to make the psychological leap. And it is a psychological leap for, and maybe not so much if you're, I don't know, 18 years old and you want to go see a band. But if you're 35 and older and you've worked hard for what you have and you're not really ready to give it up, pretty big psychological leap to say, you know, what am I willing to go do? So, you know, there's no limit right now to the challenges we face. Just when we think we are getting some movement, you know, here in California, our state is very conservative. So we're not doing anything that has to do with partial fans or anything like that. We start to get optimistic about bringing fans back in. And now 31 states are setting records with regard to their infection rates. And so every time you get a little optimism and a little bit of hope, the disease comes back and whacks you for the arrogance of having that and just realizing it.
And then you speak about, you know, keeping up with this thing, really plugging yourself into the conversation. And this is what this podcast is all about. It's really get the experts talking. We're really grateful that you're very honest about, you know, where you're at in tackling this challenge. How much do you see technology playing a part, and how much are you playing around with the various, you know, solutions that are out there, or, you know, developing, you know, different models and changing the thinking around, you know, what it is to build that confidence? You know, communications is obviously going to play a very important part, reaching out to the community, and showing people that it is safe step by step.
So technology is going to be super important in the final in the final outcome of where we get to and how we get there. But I also want to step back for just a second. You know, there's we tend to have evolved, at least in the States and internationally. I don't think I'm skilled enough to speak about each, you know, whether the Europe or Australasia or that type of thing. But in the States, you know, we have evolved into this situation where we just want someone to fix us quickly. And we have not demonstrated patience for understanding that quick fixes in many cases are not really available. And people here are frustrated. You know, they got frustrated because first there was no masks, and then there were masks, and then there was, you know, sort of one set of directions, and that changes to another set of directions. But if you step back and think about that, That is the result of science. That's the result of information. At the very beginning, nobody knew anything for sure, right? So what we did was we relied on the things we had learned from other pandemics, things like Ebola, things like SARS, COVID-1. We had, you know, that's all we know. So let's take some of those things and And then as we got more information, we learned that, you know, that wasn't exactly the best thing to do. And so it's okay to actually let, you know, science and information change our how we go forward. You know, I myself and my family, I mean, when we called up and we had a service deliver our groceries because we did not want to go out, and we wiped down all of the containers that the groceries were in and all of this stuff. Now, at the end of the day, that didn't really hurt anybody, and we were probably better off to have our stuff clean. But the science then told us that fomite or surface contact was not a material form of transmission of the infection. So great, people start to relax all that, and you can see the evidence of that everywhere. But as a part of a fundamental piece of the puzzle that we have some control of, cleaning is something that we can use as a foundational building block to be able to set the criteria for that confidence that we need to create in our facilities with our people. And, you know, and I've been on many calls and talked with many people and basically just said, look, at the end of the day, us being more clean isn't going to hurt anybody, right? It's a benefit to our industry. And if we are, again, having an honest conversation, were we as clean as we probably should and could have been on a regular basis? The answer is no, right? So not a bad thing. So that's a functional thing that includes technology, because now as you start to think about cleaning techniques, you know, we know for sure that UVC light absolutely kills not only COVID-19, but viruses sort of et al. Now we're seeing how that UV light is being incorporated into standalone sort of robots, like have been being used for the last several years in surgical suites and other healthcare environments. We're now seeing those being put into wands that people can carry and actually get in and around devices. They are being installed in the ceilings over areas like locker rooms and all that. They're being installed in HVAC airflow ducts. They're being installed to sanitize the rails on escalators. So you know, that technology, that's not new technology. It's been there for a while. But what this has done is this has facilitated it being moved into a delivery vehicle in a variety of ways to help make our facilities cleaner and safer and more sterile. So, I mean, whether we talk about cleaning or whether we talk about, like, temperature is another great example. In the very beginning, everybody's like, let's temperature check. So as it turns out, when we now know what we know about the disease, particularly with asymptomatic carriers, you can have, you know, the numbers vary, but you can have 35%+ of the people that have the disease be asymptomatic, meaning it's like you and I talking today. You could have it, I could have it, there's no way we would know. There were some statistics that started to show up that said a vast majority of people with COVID symptoms going into emergency rooms did not have a fever. So now you have to say to yourself, well, wait a second, this whole temperature check thing, it's probably not what we want it to be in terms of a methodology to combat COVID. And so, for example, for me personally, I don't think about temperature checks anymore as it relates to an effective methodology for prevention of COVID transmission. On the other hand, from SARS, from Ebola, and from just the regular flu, I have always, particularly since 2003, been of the opinion that we should temperature check our casual staff, particularly our food service staff, because they live paycheck to paycheck. They work multiple jobs. And in fact, when I was that kind of person, I went to work sick. Why? Because I needed the money.
How many people are we talking about here? What's the...
For SoFi Stadium on an NFL event day, if we were fully open and engaged, the casual staff number would be in and about 6,000 persons. So, and obviously the order of magnitude is different on an arena or a convention center or performing arts center, that kind of thing. But because of this situation, it is my plan to temperature check staff, casual staff and employees forever. Because it's just like the current testing right now, the many of the testing protocols that we're looking at for COVID, they can also test for influenza A, influenza B. So all of a sudden now, as a result of this, I have an opportunity to keep my operations safer, going forward, regardless of anything. So I'm not a, I'm not an advocate of testing fans for temperature, but I am a huge advocate of making sure that we continue to test staff from this moment on. Just with a common cold, just anybody who's sick. If you're sick and you have a fever, you're transmitting something. I don't want somebody doing that in proximity to food or in proximity to our other employees or our guests. So again, I know it's a little wordy, but you know, you start with one premise, you learn from that premise, and then you adapt as is appropriate by the information, the experience, and what the science tells us. And that's how we build this foundation of comfort for people when we have the opportunity to eventually bring them back in.
And you talk about, you know, connections, and we're certainly seeing a lot more connections, a lot more relationships being built as people try to figure all of this out. But I'm wondering, from your position, how much are you learning from the Japanese and the Olympics and the summer international events such as the World Cup? How much can be learned from those that are hosting these types of events?
An enormous amount. And they're also out trying to learn from us as well, right? There's nobody that has nobody has cornered the market on what to know about this disease. And I haven't actually reached out to anybody that hasn't been more than forthcoming and willing to share what their experiences are and their thoughts. And with that, to me, that creates an obligation and a responsibility. And in the same way, there isn't anybody ever who's reached out to me that doesn't get the full attention of what I can contribute to that discussion. And I haven't found anybody in any of the public assembly facilities industries who acts any differently. We are in touch with many of the other NFL franchises that are currently hosting fans. And we stay in touch with them to say, hey, you know, what were you thinking? What did you learn? What are you going to do different now? What would you have done if you knew now then? That kind of thing. I mean, there are several organizations. The Miami Dolphins is a really great example. They should get a lot of credit because they came out before anybody else and just sort of opened it up and said, hey, here's what we're thinking. Here's what our current plan is. Here's where, how we're going to go about that. And they remain available and they're in a learning environment today. And there are many, many other organizations that are like that. So I don't think there's anybody, I haven't come across anybody that isn't willing to share what they think. It's as important to think, ask them what they're worried about, what are they concerned about, what are the next steps for them. I mean, as an industry, it's absolutely important for us to be able to elevate this knowledge and experience industry-wide because, you know, you've seen what's happened in major U.S. sports right now. You know, in the beginning of Major League Baseball, they had issues with some baseball teams. And then they learned from that. We learned from the success of the NBA bubble and the NHL bubble. We're gonna need to be doing things differently in the future, but yet we don't know what that different means yet. So we have to be diligent in terms of trying to stay as aware and communicative as possible.
Step forward, Lou Marciani, this year and the creation of the Innovation Institute for Fan Experience. Can you tell us a little bit about why you think such an institute is important, your involvement in it, and also your relationship with Lou?
So I'll start with my relationship with Lou. If you make the mistake of answering his call, Lou will be your friend forever, right? Lou embodies character to me. Lou Marciani has never been about Lou. For as long as I've known him, Lou, his commitment has been about making others better, about training others to be better. And his superpower is the ability to put his arm around a couple people's shoulder, introduce them, and convince them that, you know, that the entire industry is going to be better if they work together. So, you know, my relationship with Lou is illustrated by my comments, but there's very little that I wouldn't do for Lou because to me, it's just the purest character in terms of trying to make others better. So I did make the mistake of answering Lou's call once, and he had a group of students who were going over to London, and I was working with Populous at the time, and we got him set up with a tour of our offices, and we were able to help him with some of the Populous-related facilities. And I don't remember when that was, and it could have been 100 years ago. And since then, it's like Lou's always been a part of my life. And so I would do anything to support him. You know, the relationship that, and I still serve on the board of advisors for the for NCS4. The segue from our previous conversation into this, talking about what's necessary for communication and information, is the perfect segue into talking about the IIFX. Whether pandemic was going on now or not, this would have been important. Because we're in such extraordinary situation right now, I think it's all that more important. And then when you look at the agenda and you look at the variety, and to me, this is really important. I mean, sometimes you get you'll get a situation where there's just a bunch of like-minded people sort of all talking, and in some cases, unfortunately, regurgitating the same information. But when you look at the variety of presenters and you look at their CVs and their backgrounds and experience, I'm personally excited about listening in and learning. These are the kind of people that I want to listen to. I hope
about the conference next month. That is,
I'm talking about the conference. Yeah, I mean, I hope I'm the kind of person that others want to listen to. And I'm afraid sometimes people are tired of hearing me, and I'm okay with that. But the IIFX, in terms of our mission and goal, in terms of bringing that information forward and executing training and bringing parts of the industry together that maybe sometimes don't always talk as much as they should, and then having a professional development opportunity with, again, the quality of experience and expertise that the conference brings together. I can't imagine how anybody in our business would not want to participate in something like that, because the potential to learn and to be better for it is enormous.
When I spoke to Lou earlier this year, as he was setting up the institute, it was my understanding that he had set it up as a result of COVID, and he explained to me, he's like, no, Ross, I didn't set this up because of COVID. I was setting it up anyway. COVID was just the fuel to the flame. And I just find that so interesting when you talk about, you know, people in the right places at the right time, and certainly with his energy and his connections, and the other part of his vision, which I found so unique, was, you know, he really had recognized through his work through NCS4. That there wasn't this global platform in which to pull people together. And you know, it's just so timely that, you know, you're on the phone one day with, our friends and colleagues in Qatar, and the next day we're speaking to the Australians. And, I'm obviously on the phone to you now, hearing about, your stadia there and all the challenges that you're trying to overcome. But yeah, I mean, the conference is a perfect kickoff to what should be some great discussions from, an international collection of delegates and speakers and participants. So we're really looking forward to that. Is there anything specific that you're looking to get your teeth into?
There's a session on disruption that includes Jim Mercurio from the 49ers and Joe Lewis, who is an independent, sort of worldwide producer of events. If anything, for myself personally, I am really looking for some insight into, right now myself and many of the rest of us are focused on how do we solve the problem that exists in front of us today. But if the pandemic has taught us anything, it is that we neglect looking forward or future casting at our own risk. And so that disruption panel is something I'm really interested to hear about what the thought process is what the results of all of the things that are going on today, how that might change the industry. And, for me, change is good because change usually yields opportunity. Now, that doesn't mean change is easy, right? So most people, human nature is to, why do we have to change something? We've been doing it this way forever. It's fine. So change isn't easy. And I accept that. But change is going to happen whether you like it or not. And with all of the changes I can think back of in my career, they have created opportunities. And those are the opportunities that I believe that the people I work with and for are expecting me to be prepared for and to be able to advise them. And so that's a perfect example about how we can take not only some things that will address the conditions that we face today, but also be stepping back from that and saying, okay, how does that apply to what we need to be prepared for? And how do I be thinking about to respond into the future?
So to those who are listening who don't know, the conference takes place 17th and 18th of November. And I'd just like to thank you, Ross, for joining us today. And hopefully we can get you on again, probably just after the conference, if your schedule allows, because it really has been fascinating talking to you. And I just wish you all the best, you and your team, in getting fans back into the stadium.
Thanks, Ross. Anytime that I have a chance to communicate with people and hopefully a little bit of inspiration about, listen, we got through everything else, we'll get through this, but how important it is for us to get through it together and to share information and support each other, I'll hit the Zoom button anytime you ask.
Thank you very much, Ross. All the best.
Cheers. Bye.